Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette, founder of the Jesuit religious order that sent priests to North America on a mission to evangelize the natives. Ignatius of Loyola was a Spanish Catholic priest and theologian who dedicated his fascinating and adventurous life to being a soldier for Christ and leader of the Society of Jesus, better known as the Jesuits. Let's learn more about St. Ignatius with the Catholic Saints podcast.
So we're going to talk about this great, great saint, St. Ignatius of Loyola. St. Ignatius gets canonized in the year 1622, and he's right at the Counter-Reformation, and he's really the high tide, I would say, of the Counter-Reformation. I mean, what he brings in and what he does to renew the church is just absolutely astounding. It's an amazing story. And we're going to talk about this incredible saint, St. Ignatius, stellar saint of the Counter-Reformation, this time when the church was in great corruption and worldliness, and yet it went through an incredible renewal and revival. And the last time we had a great new springtime was really the Counter-Reformation, the time of people like St. Ignatius of Loyola. So let's just go back and talk about St. Ignatius of Loyola. He's born in 1491 in Spain, and that was a time when there was the beginning of a renewal in Spain. You had Cardinal Jimenez, Francisco Jimenez, who in the 1490s becomes the Cardinal Archbishop of Toledo. He works with Queen Isabella, and Queen Isabella really wants a reform of the church. And it's interesting that the reform of the church in Spain begins with a lay woman. It's Queen Isabella who really pushes and uses her royalty to push the Pope to appoint this Franciscan who's known as a holy priest, Francisco de Jimenez, Cardinal Jimenez. She gets him appointed as the Archbishop of Toledo, and then he works with Queen Isabella to bring about a reform in Spain. And one of the fruits of that reform is going to be what we're going to see with the conversion of St. Ignatius of Loyola. But let's talk about St. Ignatius and how he ends up going through a radical conversion.
And just to go back to the point of what you were saying of we need renewal, we need reform in the church, this is one of the principles that the Counter-Reformation teaches us that we can learn today as well. I'll say it in Latin and then I'll translate it because everything always sounds better in Latin. Ecclesia semper reformanda, the church always reforming, that the church always needs to be in a spirit of reform. And not only the church, but each one of us, members of the church, that we're all called to personal reform. And that's what we see in each of these people. Jimenez, as you mentioned before, he reforms himself. It's not till age 48 when he's appointed this cardinal archbishop that he has a deeper conversion in his own life to lead the reform of himself, to lead the reform of the order, the Franciscan order that he's a member of, and then the reform of the clergy to which he's in charge of. And so we really see that it's never too late. And same with Saint Ignatius. His conversion happens at age 30. That's not old, but it's later in life. Sometimes we think that these saints are just born saints.
Right,
they bore the ST period in front of their name. But they're not. They're just like us. And Ignatius is a great example of that. He was very worldly. He was very vain. Even though he was born to a Catholic family, a noble family, youngest of 11 children. By age 7, his mother had died. But he always wanted to be a soldier. That was his dream in life. Mm-hmm. He loved reading books of chivalry, the knights doing great deeds and fighting for a damsel in distress. These are the books that captured his imagination. This is the life he wanted to choose. And he lived a very vain life. He says that he cared about what he looked like. He's very particular about his looks, about his dress, his comportment. These were things that were a priority to him. He sought his fortune in the army. So his conversion really takes place on the battlefield. He's fighting in the Battle of Pamplona. And Pamplona is part of the Kingdom of Navarre. Spain was divided into different countries. And the Kingdom of Navarre was between France and Spain, that border there. And he's fighting at the Battle of Pamplona, and he was fighting for the Spanish forces against the French. And at a key moment, the Spanish wanted to pull back. They said, we can't compete against the enemy. And even though Ignatius was a lower ranking officer, he rallied the troops and convinced them, no, we need to fight. We need to fight bravely. And a cannonball blows through the wall of the town, and he stands in the gap and leads the men in a surge of energy from the Spanish forces. But another cannonball rips through his legs, really just tearing the left calf off, his right shin completely broken. And soon after, the Spanish have to surrender. So he is convalescing. And this break was so bad that they had to set it. And they didn't set it really well.
Resetting a broken leg without painkillers, you have to re-break the bone. That's incredibly painful.
He almost dies on the battlefield because of this re-breaking of his leg. They did such a poor job of it. Actually, he has a bone protruding from his leg, and he didn't want to have that bone protruding, so they saw that part of the bone off that's protruding from his leg after the reset. But he's walking with a serious limp, and he was so vain, he said, I don't want to walk with the limp the rest of my life. Re-break the leg and reset it and stretch it out with weights. This is his experience of life.
And in terms of his vanity, what he's willing to suffer for vanity. And of course, he's going to reflect on that. Later on, he'll challenge himself, what is he willing to suffer for the sake of Jesus Christ? He's a tough guy of strong willpower already, even before his conversion.
So he's recovering in a family's estate, and he asks for some books about the knights and the damsels and
chivalry,
distress. Chivalry.
Romance and action novel. That's the popular reading then.
And then they say, we don't have any of those books. We have A Life of Christ, and we have some stories of saints. And he's not interested. I don't really want it. But then he just becomes bored because he's just in his bed all day.
Because he's in there for weeks and weeks. All there is books. And so he's got to read something. So he starts to read.
And so he starts to read The Life of Christ. He starts to read the lives of the saints. And he's reading those, but he's also having dreams of being a knight still. And he starts to realize what's going to become an important thing in his discernment of spirits is that when he reflects on the lives of the saints, he has great consolation and happiness in the life of Christ. When he reflects on being a knight, and doing the things that he had always dreamed of, he quickly becomes dissatisfied and discomforted. Mm-hmm. He realizes that there's desolation and there's consolation in prayer. In this reflection, he turns it to prayer. He starts to read the lives of the saints. He says, what Dominic did, the founder of the Dominicans, what Francis did, the founder of the Franciscans, can't Ignatius do? And so he's inspired by them, seeing that those are the real heroes.
I love how he uses his competitive spirit. So Ignatius is the one who rises to the rank of an officer in the army, and he's a competitive guy. I mean, you can see in the battle, he's not going to give up even when the odds are against him. He's going to rally the men to fight the French. And once they lose Ignatius, they all give up. So you see his competitive leadership skills. And as he's reading the lives of the saints, as you say, Ben, he's competing with him. He's like, well, I can do that, or I can compete with that. What would it look like if I did as much penance or as much prayer as these guys? I could do that. He's using his imagination, thinking about being competitive and competing in a sense with these spiritual athletes of Christ, so to speak, these great saints, and harnesses that ambition.
And one of the things that we like to discuss here at the Augusta Institute is that it was because of Cardinal Jimenez's initiative in getting a printing press that these stories were readily available for him to read.
Jimenez used the new technology. He was innovative, and he used the new technology of the printing press to publish books. And he got these books, spiritual books. And so The Life of Christ that Ignatius read, that was published by Jimenez in his printing press. It was by a German, Ludwig the Saxon, His Life of Christ. Likewise with The Lives of the Saints. And so these books are laying around the castle because Cardinal Jimenez got a printing press at the university he founded for renewing theology and the study of the faith, and especially the study of scripture at Alcalá. And so those books are there. And of course, they give him a book to read, and he reads that book and it converts him. So Ignatius is reading the lives of the saints. He's reading The Life of Christ. This inspires him to embark on a new kind of life for himself. So he begins to pray now, and he begins to reflect on this. And as he gets better and his leg begins to heal, this takes about a year, he decides he's going to go on a pilgrimage. That's what saints do.
He decides to go to this beautiful and ancient shrine in Spain dedicated to Our Lady of Montserrat. And it's this beautiful setting. It's just outside of Barcelona. It's a beautiful jagged rocks coming up.
It's a gorgeous area. The rocks, the hills, the beauty and hiking up there, it's gorgeous.
It's a beautiful image of a black Madonna that knights would spend all night in vigil before they would go to battle, and they would pray before they're made a knight in front of this image of Mary. This is the tradition. And then they would be enter into the rank of knight. Well, Ignatius wants to do that, but he's given up his dreams of being a knight in the sense of a military captain, of serving in a temporal army. He wants to work in the spiritual army. And so he spends all night in vigil before this image of Lady of Montserrat, and he leaves his sword at her statue. You can still see a copy of the sword there, but then the actual sword somewhere else. And so he dedicates his life to Our Lady.
Yeah, I love that image of him leaving the sword there and what that represented, really a break with his life. He loved vanity. He loved honor and position. And the sword represented all those things. It represented his social class. It represented his career. And so to leave that behind was a big sacrifice. Now, there's a story that as he's making his way to Montserrat, he runs into a Muslim and he gets mad at the Muslim. He talks about theology and God, and he almost takes out his sword and kills him.
He makes a deal with God. He says, if that Muslim takes a right or he takes a left, I'm going to kill him if he goes right. I'm going to let him live if he goes left. And the providence was that the Muslim went left. This just shows his passion and his zeal for right teaching and the service of God.
And his competitive spirit.
Besides leaving his sword, he actually takes off all his royal garment, his noble armor and his noble garments, and then trades it for a beggar's cloth. And he goes just across the valley to a little cave called Manresa. And you can still visit that today. And it's in Manresa that he has a deeper conversion. He devotes himself to prayer. He's constantly praying and crossing the valley and going to Mass at Montserrat. He has a spiritual director that's Dominican. He's being trained by the Benedictines as well. So he's receiving the great fruits of these religious orders. He has no idea that he's going to found a religious order, but he's receiving this deep formation in Christian discipleship, praying, fasting, and beginning to jot down notes that he receives in his spiritual insights that become the base for the spiritual exercises.
It's almost like a year-long spiritual retreat in the cave in Manresa, which, by the way, is so beautiful to go there where Ignatius spends so much time praying. And he gets the spiritual exercises there. That's where he discerns. So he uses the same practical principles for training as a soldier for training spiritually.
And when he structures his Jesuits, the Society of Jesus that he founds later, the head of that order is called the Superior General.
It's an army.
Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride. The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.